Good afternoon, everybody. This is Bill Ruggiero on a Talking Topic show. By the way, I want to wish everybody a happy new year in 2026. And today's show has been sponsored in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Mass Commission for the Blind, and underwritten by Unibank. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 508-797-1117. That's 508-797-1117. And you can always visit us on the website at www.audiojournal.org, and you can hear my past and present shows and on the archives on our website. Well, I do have a very special guest. Her name is Catherine Thornton, who is the director of the Radioactive Theater. And I thought I have her in studio. And Catherine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bill. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to be here, too. So question number one is, well, I heard that you were a teacher in, yes, in
I'll tell you a little bit about it.
In New Jersey.
Yes.
Can you tell us all about it?
I was a teacher in New Jersey for 32 years. I taught English and speech and theater arts, and I directed the school plays, probably about 100 of them.
Wow. What kinds of plays were you in?
That I was in, or I directed plays mostly.
Yeah.
I was in plays in college, but once I started teaching, I was the director.
Yeah, what kind of plays did you direct?
Every year we did a spring musical, and so I've done probably all of the Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff, for those who know what those are, South Pacific, Oklahoma, those kinds of shows, and plays like Grease and Bye Bye Birdie and Once Upon a Mattress. Those are a few that I've done, some of them more than once. When you stay in one place long enough, you can get to do shows twice.
Oh, I like Grease. Grease is a good play. I saw that with my Auntie Rosie once.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I saw it in Wheaton, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
How many times did you do the acts in Greece?
Well, we did the whole show, so we did all of the music, all of the dancing. It was a lot of fun, you know, Ramalama Ding Dong.
Yeah, oh yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
And let's see. Okay, and what else?
Bill, this is Harry. Can I ask Catherine a question?
Sure.
Catherine, I didn't know this. You mentioned that before you were a teacher, you acted in some plays.
Yeah.
So can you tell us some of those plays?
Well, one of them was The Boor, which was the Chekhov play. And that was a lot of fun because my boyfriend at the time played the other role. So it was really good to be able to kiss someone on stage that I wanted to kiss.
Yes.
Wow. And were you ever in a – was The Boor a musical?
No. The Boor is a one-act play by Chekhov.
That's what I
and
thought.
And I was the murderess in a play called Nine Girls, which is about nine sorority sisters who go away to like a lodge in the mountains. And there is one who decides to bump off a couple of her friends. And, that was one that I particularly like to remember that one because that was one of the few shows that my parents actually came to. And that was fun. So that was really interesting that my father got to see a play where I was the bad girl.
Wow.
So we won't share with the board of directors that you were a murderess in a previous life.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So you were never in a musical?
No, I like to sing, and I can sing loudly.
Mm-hmm. I bet
but
you could.
Wouldn't. But in a chorus, I get put in the back.
Uh-huh.
Or I learn the lyrics, but I don't sing. So I'm not talented in that way, but I used to make demands of my students where when we didn't have an orchestra or music, I would say, well, just sing it. And, you know, the expectation was that they would. And, of course, they did because they could sing.
Right, right. Yeah. So, Bill, can I ask her a few more questions?
Sure.
So I'm a big fan of musicals. When I was young, I performed and sang in Oliver, The King and I. But my favorite, even Oliver is a special play to me because I was in that play in sixth grade. But the one play that had a really powerful meaning for me, probably because it was written in the 60s during this all cultural revolution, but was Pippin.
Yes, that's one of my favorite ones, but I never did that one. I always thought it was a little too adult for high school if you're going to do it right. And so that was not a play that I ever chose to do. But one of my favorites was Fiddler on the Roof.
I had a
remarkable group of students that year. I'm always amazed when schools announce the play they will be doing next year and they announce it like the spring before, because I was always much more spontaneous. First of all, you get new students first off.
Right.
Students mature and they come back after freshman year and they're a whole new person. And so, I never chose the play for the spring until the winter, till around December or so, when, knowing that in the spring, in January, we would have to cast or whatever. Cause mostly it takes about 3 months of rehearsal and choreography and scenery and all those things.
Right.
But Fiddler on the Roof was one of my favorites. I had a really remarkable Tevye, and the whole cast was a lot of fun. They were friends, and so it made it really a really good show. And what we did too, because of the religious elements, we had a local rabbi come in, sit with the students and explain some of the rituals that are discussed that come up in the show. And that was very special. And one thing that happened, it was, it actually snowed that week of the show, which was the third week in April. And I was gathering the students, and I had an assistant director who was a wonderful former student, and I'm looking for the cast and I can't find them. And it's like 5 minutes till the show. He had them outside looking at the sunset, which that particular night after the snowfall was particularly splendid. And here he's out, sunrise, sunset, and he's got 50 kids out there looking at the sunset. I rounded them up and got them back in so they could be where they belonged during the overture.
Wow, that's great. You know, my wife Rachel is Jewish, and we just recently rewatched Fiddler on the Roof because the both of us, we haven't seen it for years, and we're watching it, and we're both laughing and crying at the same time. And this one scene I totally forgot about, you know, the, do you love me?
Love it.
Bill, have you ever seen Fiddler on the Roof?
Well, I've seen parts of it, but I've never really listened to the movie, but.
Yeah, we'll have to get that music for you. I think you'll really like it. It's a powerful story. And of course, Tevye, what was his name? Topol was the actor's name. And you know, on the one hand.
Yes.
And of course,
Zero Mostel was the original actor on Broadway. I don't know if you remember who he was.
No.
He was in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. He was a burly guy. And he was very famous, you know, with the original cast. But I do have to tell you this. When they want to convince the mother that the daughter should marry Seidel. Was that
the
same?
I think so, yeah.
And so they contrive a dream.
Yes.
And you have to figure out a way to do this ghost. And we really didn't know. We couldn't. What are we going to do? Finally, we decided to put the girl who's supposed to be Frumacera on the shoulders of a very tall guy in the cast, and then cover her with sheets and a really long thing so that they could sway back and forth when she's saying, no, she has to marry, you know. Right. And it was really, really funny. And it was something that, that they remembered really well too, because they were all friends. So they thought it was pretty funny that she was on this guy's shoulders while she's doing that whole Frumacera thing. It was, right. It was pretty funny.
Right. Oh, that's great.
Sometimes you have to solve problems.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Bill, do you mind if we take a little break?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Folks, we will be right back. Stay tuned.
Music Worcester is excited to announce The Complete Bach, an 11-year project to perform the compositions of Johann Sebastian Bach. This bold project will include 12 concerts a year over the next 11 years, ending in 2035 on Bach's 350th birthday. Enjoy listening to Bach's vocal, organ, and harpsichord, as well as string and orchestral arrangements, all happening in various venues in Worcester. By 2035, all known pieces by Bach will have been performed, all in Worcester. Be a part of this historical endeavor. Subscription packages for three or more events, along with single tickets, are on sale at musicworcester.org.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Okay, well, we are back here at Audio Journal's Talking Topics with Catherine Thornton. And Catherine, I want to ask you about radioactive theater, because I've been listening for a long, long time. And my favorite episode was when they were playing that game Gin.
Right.
And I really liked that episode. And
you were saying that you liked when he kept counting out the cards.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, one for you, one for me, one for you, two for me, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's pretty funny. And he does it about a dozen times, so it gets pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like he can't deal without counting them out.
Yeah. And I want to ask you, where did radioactive theater come from? Where did the name come from?
Well, that was before my time. In the 90s is when it really started with the very early shows. And they're very clever making up names for all of our programs. So I'm sure they thought, do something with radio in it. And that's what they came up with, radioactive theater. And so it was not until 10 years later that I came on board. When I first started, I was a volunteer with Worcester Magazine, And then the volunteer coordinator at the time knew that I had done theater work, and she asked me if I would like to revive Radioactive Theater. And I said, sure. And so from then on, we've been doing it. So I've been doing it, I guess, since about 2014 or so.
Yeah, who was that woman? Was that Valerie Clapham?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know her.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And so she got me started with Radioactive Theater, and we try to do new shows as frequently as we can. Some years we get to do more than others. Right now our goal is to try to do at least six or seven. That's not exactly one every month, but, you know, we're trying very hard to do some comedies and mysteries and dramas and some old-time radio, Lux Radio Theater, suspense, you know, those kinds of shows, and, you know, try to do as many as we can every year.
Yeah.
Bill, can I ask her another question?
Yeah, sure.
So, when you choose these plays, Catherine, I know most of them seem to be from the 1930s and 1940s.
What they consider that golden age of radio actually goes right up into the 50s.
Oh, it
does? Probably not into the 60s. By the 60s, the radio programming changed quite a bit.
Right.
But some of the shows that we have, like Gunsmoke and some of the others, were on the radio right into the 50s, 1956, you know, even later.
Right, right. Yeah,
I remember Gunsmoke.
Sure, Gunsmoke and the Lone Ranger and that suspense and the Lux Radio Theater. Those shows were on right into the 50s.
Yeah. I've talked to several listeners who have shared that, you know, they love Radioactive Theater and they, you know, that it brings back memories for them, and it's, they've said to me, the Radioactive team does a really good job of acting out the words on the page, you know, and that's, you know, and knowing your history, I can see why that's important to you because you've done it for so long.
Well, we are really lucky. The volunteers we have, are really good. Some of them are voiceover actors. Some of them are in community theater or have done college theater or even high school theater. Some of them have done no theater at all and are just good learners. And they're anxious to try something new, regardless of whatever age they happen to be now. Some of them, it's revisiting something they did when they were younger. And for some, it's trying something they never thought they could do. And so it's a little adventurous for them.
Right, right. So I'm going to ask you one more question, then I'm going to turn it back to Bill. Thank you, Bill, for being so patient.
Oh, you're welcome.
So my question is, are there any favorites that any Radioactive Theater plays you did here with Audio Journal right here in this live studio room where you record them? Do you have any favorites that really were just memorable and fun to do?
Well, so many of them are fun to do. I mean, for example, that Gin Game one, I'm kind of lost to give you specifics, but I would like to talk about the live productions that we've done because those really stick out in my mind. We've done a number of them. I think it might be six. We did Vintage Hitchcock, which is one of my favorites. We did It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
We did You Can't Take It With You most recently. So we've done a number of them that were a lot of fun. We did one that Vince Lombardi wrote that was called Radio Days, and that was a lot of fun because we had people auditioning to be on the radio who were jugglers who were belly dancers. I mean, people who obviously couldn't perform for radio. And that was a lot of fun. And we did something that was called Breaking Wind, which was at the time Breaking Bad was popular on TV. It was a spoof of Marlowe. And what Vince did was he changed everything that sort of started with an M to the name of a wine. So it was Merlot and, you know, things of that sort. And that show was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, that does sound fun.
Yeah.
What are you guys working on now for Radioactive Theater? Are you working on anything now?
Well, right now, one of the things we're recording is a play called Baggage, and I hope we can get that done for February for Valentine's Day season. It's a comedy about, you know, how do you cope with somebody that you meet who has baggage, which is, you know, something from their past that has them not quite settled. And so that's kind of a fun comedy. But, of course, we're working now on the spring fundraiser, which will be coming up soon. And so that, you know, that's what people who are involved in Radioactive Theater are working on now with Harry, and Julie Standrovich will be directing that. And Coconuts and Castaways will be something coming up in the very near future in April.
Wow, Coconuts and Castaways.
should we surprise Bill and tell him what it's a spoof of?
Okay, tell him.
So, Bill, do you remember the TV show Gilligan's Island?
Yes.
So Castaways and Coconuts is a spoof, a parody, a remake of Gilligan's Island.
Wow, I didn't know that. It's cool.
And we just we took the script and we made it more modern day and we added some fun things in there about audio journal. So we're very excited about it.
You should add me in there.
We should add you in there?
Yeah.
Wow. What a neat idea. Because, you know, the whole reason why they were shipwrecked, do you remember why they were shipwrecked? Because of the weather. It was a storm.
Yeah, and I predicted it.
And they didn't listen.
They didn't.
Right. They and didn't. I told them, I says, there's a storm coming.
That's right. All right. We're going to take another break here. And while we take this break, Bill, you can think about some more questions for Catherine. Okay?
Yes.
You say you love a good book, that you enjoy listening to a good story that piques your interest, which challenges your imagination to explore places where it has never gone before? If so, then Audio Journal's Backyard Bookshelf is for you. Backyard Bookshelf is Audio Journal's award-winning book reading program that always has a local flavor, featuring books about New England, as well as books written by local authors or native New Englanders, be it fiction or nonfiction. So join us, won't you? Just tune in every Friday at 4 p.m. and enjoy. That's Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal.
Hi, the Bay State Council of the Blind has available free Braille copies of a new publication from the CDC. It's entitled COVID-19 Vaccination Guidance, and this one-volume publication focuses on information about the vaccines and vaccine safety. To get your free copy, send your name and mailing address to kim.charlson@perkins.org. That's kim.charlson@perkins.org.
Okay, we are back on Talking Topics, and my name is Bill Ruggiero, along with Catherine Thornton. Catherine, have you ever thought about, like, little kids' Radioactive Theater? I mean, like, making a little Radioactive Theater cartoon.
Well, we have done some work with younger people, but it's difficult because they need to be brought places by grown-ups.
Yes.
And so when you start dealing with children and child actors, it kind of makes things very complicated. So for the most part, you know, the people that we deal with are able to drive,
yeah.
or they get,
yeah.
if, or they're older teenagers and they can get dropped off by their parents.
Like, what I mean is, have you ever thought about, like, making up a radioactive theater show? Like, for instance, like, making up, like, a cartoon. Like, for instance, I made up a little cartoon character I think about for little kids is Buzzy the Bumblebee.
Yeah.
He's a really cute bumblebee. And he is my imaginary friend. And, well, I made up this story called Buzzy's First Christmas. And what it's about a bee. His name is Buzzy, and he wants to bring Christmas to all the bees in the beehive,
okay.
but he doesn't know how to do it. So one day he writes a letter to Santa Claus, and Santa Claus accepts his letter and, you know, starts laughing because he doesn't think that bees celebrate Christmas. Well, and Buzzy has an idea. What he does is he goes to the tree, cuts down the tree by himself, brings the tree to the beehive, and then, like, puts lights on it and stuff like that. And then when the bees get up, they're like, see bright lights, and they don't know what it is, and they're getting scared, and they think other people are going to harm them. So the queen talks to Buzzy, and Buzzy's saying, oh, I'm going to do nice things for the for all my bee friends and bee family. I'm going to bring Christmas to them. And then towards the end of the story, they all fall in love and be happily ever after.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful story.
Yeah. And I think that we can put it into a radioactive theater show. Like a play about that.
Well, we'll have to see if we can collaborate on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think maybe, Bill, you can be the director.
Yeah.
If you, and we can work on that, and I'm going to task you with all the action steps to get that done.
Right.
All right?
Right.
So, I don't want to close out just yet, but, you know, with every Talking Topics episode, you like to know some, you like to get to know the guest a little bit more. You
yes.
ask them about, what do you ask them about? You ask about their hobbies, their food, or their favorite restaurant, or their favorite vacation spot.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes. And, well, I want to ask you, Catherine, what is your favorite hobby?
My favorite hobby is volunteering. My children call me the professional volunteer because when I first retired, I worked part-time for a translation company, and I did what was called cross-cultural training. And that I did that for 5 years after I retired from teaching. And then I moved up here, and every once in a while, my daughter-in-law or my son would say, you should go get a job at the library. They're hiring, or they would see something that, I would tell them, I don't want a job. Stop looking for jobs for me. I said, at the time I started volunteering teaching English as a second language up here. And then I joined the Uxbridge Elderly Connection to volunteer there. And then eventually I got on that board, and I've been on that board for 15 years. Then I joined the Uxbridge Lions, which is a very important part of my life because I really appreciate its mission, and I enjoy the people and the activities that are involved with the Lions. I joined the Shakespeare Club in Grafton. That's an organization that's been going on for about 35 years, and I've been part of that since around 2007. And what we do there is we read Shakespeare and we discuss it. And that group meets at the Brigham Hill Community Barn in Grafton. And, of course, the second love of my life after teaching is audio journal. And one of the things that I enjoy the most using my time is volunteering here, being on the board, contributing what I can to the board, and most of all, you know, working with Radioactive Theater and helping with whatever fundraising that aspect of Audio Journal performs. Yes. And that's what keeps me busy, besides my kids and my grandkids.
Well, my hobbies is volunteering here at Audio Journal, doing different things, and going to program, and going out in the community.
That's terrific.
In the community. Well, today we went to the dollar store in the Shaws, mm-hmm. and bought some flowers for our staff who's leaving, and he's moving to Rhode Island. We said goodbye to him today. He was funny. He was a funny teacher, and his name was John, and I just want to wish him luck.
That's luck, John. That's great.
Yeah, that's wonderful you did that, Bill.
Yeah. And, well... and also, what's your favorite restaurant?
I don't really have a favorite restaurant. I'll tell you, I do like the Grafton Grill and Crust, it's called.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's one of the few restaurants that I really have, I go to with any regularity. I used to go to the Longhorn in the Millbury Mall, the Blackstone Mall.
Yeah.
But that place is all torn up right now, so I pretty much stay away from it. They're doing some major construction there.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Right.
You know what I like about the Grafton Grill and Crust? If it's the restaurant I'm thinking of, their menu has large print.
Good for them.
And I actually, when I got there that one night, I asked my server, can I please see the manager? She said, sir, is anything wrong? I said, no, I have something really good to tell the manager.
Yes.
And I said, not only am I happy about this large print on your menu, but I'm telling all my friends to come to your restaurant because of your menu.
Yeah, it's not dark, and you could read the menu.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, Bill, you've been to, you've traveled to New York, to Chicago. You've been to Chicago several times.
Yes,
Where do you think Catherine has traveled to?
Where have you traveled to, Catherine?
Well, other than in the United States, England and Italy.
Wow.
And I enjoyed both places. I used to be able to speak some Italian, and so one afternoon on the bus when we had a bit of a ride, I pretended I was speaking Italian. And nobody...
You pretended.
I pretended. And nobody on the bus knew that I wasn't really speaking Italian because none of them could speak Italian. And so we had quite a bit of fun with that. And then they finally realized that, you know, come si dice la domanda anzi angone, but was none of that was... Yeah, none of that was really real Italian.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I love Italian food, I'll tell you that. But my favorite restaurant is the Boynton Restaurant. That's on Highland Street. You know where it is?
No, but I'm interested in it.
You know where... I don't know where it's near, but...
It's actually just down the street from that restaurant that has the huge inflatable lobster on it, the crab.
Okay,
But it's on that street, and it runs right downtown into mm-hmm. Lincoln Square.
Yeah. Some of the things I do like to do that have to do with the theater, of course, the Hanover is a marvel in itself.
Yes, yes.
But that Gene McDonough Theater is great. They do wonderful shows. They do Shakespeare. It's inexpensive and very creative, and the things they do are very innovative and interactive with the audience. So they're very clever. Worcester Light Opera does wonderful shows.
Yes.
It's a small theater, also inexpensive.
Can you describe that theater to our listeners? Because that's a nice, intimate theater?
Well, it's a big old house, and actually not such a big old house. They've just done a wonderful job of utilizing every bit of space. And so it's a small stage. It's probably not more than 16 feet wide by maybe 10 feet deep. It's very small, but they do a wonderful job. I've seen musicals there, and with 8 or 10 or 12 people on stage doing a company number, and, you know, and it still works. So they do a wonderful job of set design. So the main room, oh, gee, does it seat 100 people? I'm really not sure.
Much? I don't think it's that much.
I'm not sure. But I've seen shows there done in what they call the round, where the action takes place in the center and the audience is around the periphery. And they manage to use up that space. So it's just an ordinary, just large room with regular sort of folding chairs so that they can, make it as flexible as possible.
Right.
But, Ed Savage has been a Radioactive Theater member. In fact, he did, you asked about favorite shows. He did do The Good Doctor with us. He played the Chekhov role. And he did Rebecca, where he played Maxim. And that's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And I like that too.
And that theater is near Webster Square, right off of James Street.
Yes, it's really easy to get to. They have their own it's not a paved parking lot, but it's enough parking for the size of their audience.
Right.
That would be a full house, you know.
Right.
So it's comfortable for that reason. And they have a very little area that's the reception area and a very little area that's for refreshments. But the main room is the thing that's important. But the shows they do are really good quality.
And that's right down the street from my house.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And Calliope is in Boylston. And,
oh, that's right.
They do wonderful shows. And that's a little bit more finished area, even though it's in the same kind of building as a small house.
Right.
But they've got graduated seating and comfortable plush chairs. They have a small stage as well. And they do wonderful productions. And of course, if you've got the time and the money and you want to drive out to Lenox, that's the Shakespeare and Company, and they do Shakespeare and other plays, and the quality of their stuff is just outstanding.
Yep.
Lenox, is that near Pittsfield? Out that way?
Near Springfield? It's out.
Oh, so
by
not as far west as Pittsfield.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, these are some really good resources to share with the listeners.
Yes.
That's great. And before I forget, Catherine, if you remember, can you tell our listeners when Radioactive Theater broadcast on the air? When during the week?
Okay, we are on Tuesday and the third and fourth Tuesday at 6, and Sunday at 8 is it gets replayed. And on the holidays, Julie Standrovich and Lori get the programming done so that we sometimes get a number of shows played during those days when, like the day after Thanksgiving and whatever, that they play more shows. And so that's really good.
That is. That's always fun.
Yep. It's always fun. And quickly, I got another question for you. How do you, do the sound effects to those shows?
Well, sound effects are fun. Back when we first started, we tried to do, because we had to, we did as many sound effects as we could by ourselves. We had a door that slammed. We had bells that we rang, buzzers and various whistles and things of that sort. Now, every sound you can imagine, you can get on the internet, on YouTube, on we can find theme music for just about anything we want. And so I think we've gotten to the point where everything is technological. We don't make many sound effects that are live.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That is so cool. I like sound effects. My favorite one is thunderstorms. So maybe Julie can put in a thunderstorm when we are going out on here on Audio Journal. But, well, we're going to wrap it up now, Harry. Do you have anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I just want to thank you and Catherine for coming today. This was a wonderful opportunity to learn more about Catherine and to learn more about radioactive theater. This has really been wonderful. And, Bill, we always appreciate you taking the time to interview such interesting people.
Oh, yes. You're welcome, Harry. And this is our first show of 2026, and I hope we can do many, many more. And this show has been provided by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind, the Mass Commission for the Blind, and underwritten by Unibank. If you have any questions, please visit us on the website at www.audiojournal.org or call us at 508-797-1117. This has been Bill Ajeo along with Catherine Thornton, bidding you a nice, happy day, and we'll see you the next time on Talking Topics. Enjoy the thunderstorm at the end. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Bill.
Bye.
Listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Bird note. What is it that draws us to a romantic partner? For birds, it might be a sweet song, compatible personality type, the right zesty scent, or outrageous dance moves. The serenade of a male white-throated sparrow prompts a response in a female sparrow's brain that resembles that of humans listening to their favorite music. Most cranes, like these sandhill cranes, duet with prospective partners for years before they begin breeding. For Stella's jays, birds of a feather pair together. Couples in which individuals have a similar temperament, either both shy or both bold, tend to be the most successful at raising chicks. Crested auklets of both sexes produce a pungent citrus perfume. Field biologists can smell a breeding colony from a boat as they approach. Blue-footed boobies, on the other hand, dance. The birds display their feet to each other in a ponderous pas de deux, a sort of dance duet. The bluer a bird's feet are, the healthier the bird is. Greater flamingos that have a larger repertoire of dance moves are considered more attractive, and the best dancers tend to pair up. How typical. For Bird Note, I'm Wenfei Tong.
When my dad started to lose his vision, we were worried. Sure, his doctor gave me and my mom some handouts, and I did my fair share of research. But we had no idea how much of a challenge vision loss would be or how it would impact his quality of life. That's why I was so glad we discovered Mass Commission for the Blind. They work with my dad, and they will work with you and your loved one as well to develop future plans and new skills and assistive technology. They even helped Dad get access to talking books and newspapers. He was so excited.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats. My heart aches, and a drowsy numbness pains my sense as though of hemlock I had drunk, or emptied some dull opiate to the drains 1 minute past, and Lethe wards had sunk. 'Tis not through envy of thy happy lot, but being too happy in thine happiness, that thou, light-winged dryad of the trees, in some melodious plot of beeches green and shadows numberless, singest of summer in full-throated ease. Oh, for a draught of vintage that hath been cooled a long age in the deep-delved earth, tasting of flora and the country green, dance and Provençal song and sunburnt mirth. Oh, for a beaker full of the warm south, full of the true, the blushful hippocrene, with beaded bubbles winking at the brim and purple-stained mouth, that I might drink and leave the world unseen, and with thee fade away into the forest dim. Fade far away, dissolve and quite forget, what thou among the leaves hast never known, the weariness, the fever, and the fret, here where men sit and hear each other groan, where palsy shakes a few sad last grey hairs, where youth grows pale and spectre thin and dies, where but to think is to be full of sorrow and leaden-eyed despairs, where beauty cannot keep her lustrous eyes, or new love pine at them beyond tomorrow. Away, away, for I will fly to thee, not charioted by Bacchus and his pards, but on the viewless wings of Poesy, though the dull brain perplexes and retards, already with thee. Tender is the night, and haply the queen moon is on her throne, clustered around by all her starry fays, but here there is no light, save what from heaven is with the breezes blown, through verdurous glooms and winding mossy ways. I cannot see what flowers are at my feet, nor what soft incense hangs upon the boughs, but in embalmed darkness guess each sweet wherewith the seasonable month endows the grass, the thicket, and the fruit tree wild. White hawthorn and the pastoral eglantine, fast-fading violets covered up in leaves. And mid-May's eldest child, the coming muskrose full of dewy wine, the murmurous haunt of flies on summer eaves. Darkling I listen, and for many a time I have been half in love with easeful death, called him soft names in many a mused rhyme, to take into the air my quiet breath. Now more than ever seems it rich to die, to cease upon the midnight with no pain, while thou art pouring forth thy soul abroad in such an ecstasy. Still wouldst thou sing, and I have ears in vain, to thy high requiem become a sod. Thou wast not born for death, immortal bird. No hungry generations tread thee down. The voice I hear this passing night was heard in ancient days by emperor and clown. Perhaps the self-same song that found a path through the sad heart of Ruth, when, sick for home, she stood in tears amid the alien corn, the same that oft-times hath charmed magic casements opening on the foam of perilous seas in fairy lands forlorn. Forlorn. The very word is like a bell to toll me back from thee to my sole self. Adieu. The fancy cannot cheat so well as she is famed to do, deceiving elf. Adieu. Adieu. Thy plaintive anthem fades past the near meadows, over the still stream, up the hillside, and now it is buried deep in the next valley glades. Was it a vision? Or a waking dream? Fled is that music. Do I wake or sleep? You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal, read by me, Nikki Whichelow. Thanks for listening.
And now, medical myths and facts with Dr. Richard Curtis.
Colostrum is the first milk produced by mammals immediately after birth. The supplements used by adults, especially athletes, are almost always bovine colostrum from cows, concentrated and dried into powder or capsules. Colostrum is biologically different from regular milk. It is much more concentrated and is designed to protect and repair. So why would adults and especially athletes take something meant for newborns? Well, a short answer is that colostrum is rich in immune and repair compounds that may help the body cope with physical stress. Colostrum contains several key components: antibodies called immunoglobulins, immune-modulating proteins called lactoferrin, and growth factors involved in tissue repair. These do not act like hormones or steroids. Instead, they primarily work locally in the gut and immune system. The strongest evidence for benefit is in gut health. Intense exercise, especially endurance training, can temporarily damage the gut lining, making it more leaky. This can lead to cramping, diarrhea, and fatigue. Several studies show that colostrum helps maintain the gut barrier, which may reduce these symptoms. Second, colostrum may help reduce upper respiratory infections like colds. Athletes in heavy training often get sick more frequently, not because their immune systems are weak, but because they are under constant stress. Some studies show fewer or shorter illnesses in athletes taking colostrum, though results are not uniform. There is modest evidence that colostrum may support recovery in athletes. The growth factors it contains may help with muscle and connective tissue repair, but the effects are subtle. This is not a muscle-building supplement, and it does not replace adequate protein, sleep, or training balance. A common misconception is that colostrum boosts performance directly or raises growth hormone levels. It does not. Oral colostrum does not meaningfully increase IGF-1 in the bloodstream and is not banned in sport. However, quality matters because poorly regulated supplements carry contamination risks. Typical doses used in studies range from 10 to 20 grams per day, taken over several days. Benefits, when they occur, tend to be preventive rather than immediate. Athletes take colostrum not to get faster overnight, but to stay healthy, protect their gut, and reduce interruptions from illness during heavy training. For the average person, benefits are likely small. For athletes under sustained physical stress, they may be meaningful, but incremental. Colostrum is best used as a supportive tool, not a shortcut. And I should add that there can be cheaper alternatives. Immune modulation, for example, with vitamin D, zinc, vitamin C, and elderberry. Gut integrity alterations with probiotics and prebiotic fibers. Finally, whey protein, bone broth, and fermented foods can be useful as well. So what if you're not an athlete? Who might benefit? Well, people with recurrent GI issues, people with frequent infections, older patients with frailty or poor nutrition, and finally short-term clinical or stress states. And who should avoid colostrum? Well, people with dairy allergy, people with certain autoimmune conditions, immunocompromised patients unless supervised, and long-term daily use without a clear indication. Consult with your physician before considering its usage.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Hello, this is Catherine Thornton, Director of Radioactive Theater. Radioactive Theater, a production of Audio Journal, debuted more than 20 years ago and has been bringing quality dramas to our listening audience ever since. Radio was the first broadcast medium, and people regularly tuned into their favorite radio programs. Families gathered to listen to their home radios in the evening. They loved the radio plays, mystery serials, soap operas, quiz shows, talent shows, variety hours, situation comedies, play-by-play sports, children's shows, cooking shows, and of course, the news of the day. And Radioactive Theater loves it all. We hope you will tune in to our tribute to the golden age of radio with old and new radio plays for your enjoyment. Tune in at 6 p.m. on the third and fourth Tuesday evenings of each month and the following Sundays at 8 p.m. More than 40 amateur and professional actors form our Radioactive Theater Group with only one goal in mind: to entertain you, our Audio Journal listeners. Archived editions of our programs are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. Check out specialty programs, and you'll see the list of archived programs. Scroll down and find Radioactive Theater, and you can see which programs have been archived for several months. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you having difficulty with your eyesight? Are you losing your vision? Are you afraid of what comes next? If you're blind or visually impaired, contact Mass Commission for the Blind to find out if you're eligible to register for services. Learn new skills to reclaim your independence. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450.